When you focus your entire organization on how can we best serve our people so they can best serve their customer, it creates a very compelling argument for servant leadership. So we're talking about different leadership models in these segments on A Call to Leadership. And it's so important to understand the different ways leaders can affect change in organizations. And of course, if there is no need for change, there's no need for leaders, because leaders help followers as a group reach a better future state. Ultimately, leadership involves decisions around how to discover, influence, and achieve a shared purpose that's ultimately leading our group to somewhere that's more attractive than we are today. I mean, that's really a big part of leadership, at least in my understanding of how to define leadership. So if I was to define leadership, I would say leadership is the discovery of, influence toward, and achievement of, at least effective leadership, of shared purpose, shared meaning. And you think, well, you know, not everybody has the same meaning in organizational context. And that's true. But what I mean by meaning is, like, where are we going? Do we all want to go there? And in fact, when we're looking at even the election cycles, and I'm chatting with people about who they're going to vote for, and they say, Nate, you know, what are some of the kinds of questions I should be asking? And I say, well, you can start with at least two questions. One, does the person who you're considering voting for, do they know where they're going? And number two, do you want to go there? Of course, those are just two questions, but I think those questions start to identify really some of the aspects of leadership, because leadership is directional. Leaders go places and they bring other people with them. In so doing, we've got to understand what are the most effective ways to create environments so that we can get the best out of this experience, because that's what life is. Life is an experience. It's a journey. And even thinking about that, I mean, I'd like to consider that life is an adventure, and we are going places that are exciting. I mean, that's ultimately how I like to describe my role as a leader. Even in this conversation right now, I want the listener, you, to be excited about our journey together to go to a better place. Now, of course, it's through a story that we tell about leadership, and then we begin to assimilate that story and make it real in our own lives so that we can create new contexts, new ways, a new future. And ultimately, the best possible future is the one where people begin to thrive. And so we can reject a scarcity mindset. We can embrace an abundance mindset. We don't have to leave people behind. We can get people involved in the conversation who would not have access to it otherwise. And that's one of the reasons why I do this. So back to servant leadership. This idea of serving others is not new. Not at all. In fact, long before Robert Greenleaf, who coined the term in the early 70s, now Robert Greenleaf was not a scholar, but he was an observer. He was a person who worked at AT&T for 40 years. And during his time at AT&T in middle management, he began to witness that leadership was in crisis, not only in organizations and corporate, quote-unquote, America, but in other institutions, universities, in communities, in general life. And he went on this quest to identify, is there a better way? Is there a better way than the traditional form of leadership, which was domineering, which was, quote-unquote, lording over others, which was hierarchical, where at the very top were the most important people, and at the bottom were the most expendable people. And somewhere in the middle was middle management to orchestrate the decrees, if you will, of the upper echelon of the valuable. And he began to dispel this based on his own experiences, based on his philosophical approach to life, his spiritual approach to life. Robert Greenleaf was a Quaker, And he embodied many of those Christian values that were synonymous with the Quaker movement. And incidentally, the Quakers were some of the first individuals group that sought to abolish slavery here in the United States. And through a directed approach to what was moral and what was right. And so the Quakers have a very interesting history here in the U.S. and the way they've begun to be champions and pioneers for progressive thought when it comes to how we treat our fellow person. And so Greenleaf grew up in this environment and began to ask the question, would a serving leader be more impactful, be more effective than a leader who is self-serving? And so he asked this huge question. He said that he believed if we were going to be servant leaders, there would be a test for us to determine whether or not we were actually operating in servant leadership. And he said it was difficult to administer. But he asked the question, he said, does a servant leader, do they help people to become wiser, freer, healthier, more autonomous, more likely themselves to become servants? And then he doubled down and asked a further question. And what of the least in society? Will they be at least no longer further deprived? Of course, that's a paraphrase. But it's really interesting that he brings it up in that way, because it asked the question of, who are we really focusing on here? Are we focusing on me, the leader, and all my needs as a leader, my needs for power, my needs for prestige, for position, for accolades, to feed my ego, to protect myself, self-preservation, if you will? Or am I focused on my followers' needs, their high priority, their highest priority needs? Who is really most important? And so Greenleaf made the assertion, what we call a normative approach or a prescriptive approach, and said, we leaders should put the highest priority needs of the follower as our most important directive. And so he viewed the organizational hierarchy pretty much the opposite of how we view organizations in terms of our standard traditional authoritarian approach, where the triangle, if you can imagine a triangle or a pyramid, at the very top, the very point, was the CEO, and of course the executive team, and then the management and supervisors and direct frontline workers, or those who've customer facing, as the lowest part, which is traditional, and of course most expendable. And he flips it. And so servant leadership flips and says, no, it's more like a tree. And at the very bottom, if you think about a tree, the roots dig deep so they can get nourishment from the ground. And that nourishment at the very bottom is the executive team, right? So those leaders are at the bottom and they are nourishing up so that the branches, which are the individual employees, are bearing good fruit. Say it's a fruit tree, right? So this is, and of course that fruit is tasty to the end user or customer, whoever that might be. It doesn't necessarily have to be in a business context. It could be in a community context. But basically, if we could focus on giving the employee all the resources that are necessary and teaching them to be resourceful, of course, so that they can work in their genius zone and do their best possible work, then they'll bear good fruit. So I'm focused on elevating these individuals, providing for their needs, listening to them, having empathy for their situations, having a sense of not only duty, but honor to serve them and help them to shine. Now, this is like a completely reverse approach to traditional business and traditional leadership. But I tell you what, I am convinced that this approach is so incredibly effective. And you can look at organizations that espouse a servant leadership model and approach. Think of like companies, Southwest Airlines, who has probably the most successful airline in the history of airlines as far as profitability goes. They have not filed bankruptcy yet. They have not restructured. They have not had to get bailouts when the government. And if you've ever been on a Southwest airline, you will notice that they have a completely different approach than the other airlines. They have this idea of fun, of empowerment. Even their field in Dallas, which is their hub, is called Love Field. They're in the love business, interestingly, for an airline. But their philosophy pours over and spills into how they do business because of their servant leadership approach. The leadership is designed and there to serve their people so that they can do their best possible work. And how they create a culture around that has been instrumental to their success. Of course, there are specific tactics involved that are not directly related to the end user experience, but they really are. You know, think about the planes that Southwest Airlines uses. They use the same exact airplane, 737. That's the only airplane they have. And there's a very specific reason for that, because they want to bear good fruit for their end user, and they want to be able to empower their people to do their best possible work. Now, why is that important? How does that connect? Well, think about it. If they only have to work on one kind of plane, then they only need one set of mechanics that understand that plane through and through, one set of type of equipment to service those planes, and on top of that, they're able to get the planes in and out more effectively and more efficiently because they are strictly focused on that one type of plane. Now, what does that mean? More on-time flights. That's good fruit. And so when you focus your entire organization on how can we best serve our people so they can best serve their customer, it creates a very compelling argument for servant leadership. In fact, the founder of Southwest Airlines, Herb Kelleher, was once asked, who's more important, your customer or your people? And his response was, I make my customer most important by making my people most important. Wow. As a business owner, as an entrepreneur myself, as a student of leadership, that's compelling. How much am I investing in my people to help them to bear good fruit? Now, again, this doesn't have to be a company. This can be a household, a family. How am I investing in my spouse? If you have children, how am I helping them to work in their genius zone to be the best possible version of themselves they can be? What am I doing about that? Am I training them? Am I listening to them? Am I empathetic toward them? Am I casting a vision toward a better future for them? I mean, these are all aspects of the servant as leader. And so I am not thinking of how can I look good, but how can I help them to perform and to be the best possible version of themselves they can be. It's amazing once we start retooling our vision for that. And it's not just Southwest Airlines. Chick-fil-A is another example. Now, some people like Chick-fil-A food. Some people don't like Chick-fil-A food, but they sure do sell a lot of sandwiches. I mean, if you've ever driven past a Chick-fil-A, many of them are constantly busy in that drive-thru line, sometimes two rows of drive-thru. When a new Chick-fil-A comes into an area, boy, watch out, because people are just lined up to go into the restaurant. Now, do they have the best possible chicken? Of course, that's an opinion. But what they do have is an environment, a culture of serving, and that culture shines through because people are attracted to that. Servant leadership is attractive. I mean, if you think about it, just practically speaking, if you had the opportunity to work for two different people, one person serves themselves. This person is all about taking all the credit. This person leads by coercion, in other words, by fear. this person has positional power, but you wouldn't follow them anywhere if they did not have the power of their title or their authority by their personal power, if you will. This person has a toxic and cancerous mindset that slashes people if they don't perform up to the standard, but rarely ever provides the tools or the environment that's safe enough to be able to move toward that. This person is an anathema to an organizational health and long-term is unsustainable. That's one. The other person, who you have an opportunity to work for, tells you when you show up at orientation, one of my primary roles is to help you and provide for you the needs necessary so that you can operate in your genius zone, so that you can exert your superpower, so that you can flourish. That's my commitment to you. I'm going to give you the tools, but I'm also going to teach you to be resourceful. And within this organization, we are going to work as a team and trust each other because we have both the servant's heart, the character, and the competence to deliver consistently the experience that we promise, not just to our end user, not just to our customer, but to every single stakeholder. Now, will we miss the mark? Of course we will sometimes. But you have complete permission to share with your management, with your supervisors, with me, what you believe we can be doing better together to improve how we serve in this organization. Now, here's our greater vision to the organization. Here's our mission. Here are our core values. If you agree that these are yours and that you will abide by them and uphold them so that we can flourish together, let's go on a journey. Let's see where this will take us, and we will walk lockstep every step of the way. Now you wonder, who would you rather work for? Well, that is a loaded question, of course, but if you were going to ask me, I would say I would work for the latter. In fact, I just recently had a very similar conversation with a new hire. We were going through orientation. And I said very similar words. Listen, part of my responsibility, one of the most important pieces of my responsibility, is to meet your highest priority needs within this organization. And as long as they fit within our mission, our vision, our values, then I will do my very best to meet those so that you can operate and work in your genius zone. And do you know this new hire was slightly perplexed? Because this person had never heard an employer at orientation say those words. In fact, at orientation, what do you normally hear? Well, here are the rules, here are the regulations, don't mess up. Somebody messed up last week and they got canned, right? It's more about how you can do wrong than what you can do right. And the fact that you have a team around you that is dedicated to your success, not only as a group, but individually, it's life-giving. It's life-giving. So this is the heart of the servant leader, because if you are a branch who will bear fruit, I want you to bear the most nourishing fruit you can possibly bear in this organization. So I need to make sure that I clear the road for that. Now you say, well, there are going to be people who will take advantage of that. And it's true. But the problem with you allowing those kind of people in your organization is a problem with your vision, your mission, and your core values. See, unless those are set and they're clear, I mean crystal clear, then you'll be like a ship without a rudder, and you'll be just letting anyone in on the team. And let me tell you something about leadership. Leadership is about protection. As a servant leader, you've got to protect the integrity of the hull of your leadership, right? Leadership, an actual ship. And so by doing that, you have to have very clear boundaries. And that's where your mission, your vision, your values come in. As a servant leader, you have to have very clear values. Generally, they're 3 to 6, 3 to 7, maybe sometimes 10 core values on what is most important. These are non-negotiable essentials within the organization. And those essentials are requirements for entry to join this team and go on this adventure. So one of my essentials when I am interviewing is I'll ask the potential hire, do you have a servant's heart? And you might have heard me say this on other episodes. And when someone responds, depending on how they respond, will determine whether we continue to take this conversation any further. But really, it's one of the very first questions I ask, because this is a character question that is essential for the kind of culture that I've developed. And if the person says, no, I don't have a servant's heart, I don't even know why you asked me that, then I would like to politely end the conversation right there. And I don't want to waste any more of their time, because I just know they won't be a fit in this organizational context. And if they say, I do have a servant's heart, or tell me more about it because I'm very interested, I'm not quite sure what that means, then we can have a conversation around it and see if it takes us to the next step. But because I have such a strong core value in that, and I know that everyone in the organization must possess that for us to be successful in reaching our desired destination, because remember what I said initially, leadership is about direction and destination, right? So as leaders, we have to first determine where we want to go, how we're going to get there, right? So we've got vision, we've got mission, and then the values that are necessary to sustain us along our way. So this is the integrity of your hull, and it's got to be strong. If it's breached, your ship will sink. There's no doubt about it. And ships sink all the time. So as leaders, we've got to be the gatekeepers. We have to be the servant gatekeepers who ultimately protect what comes in and what goes out. Now, this isn't by any means authoritarian. This is simply a means of saying that I care so deeply about our team that I am going to do everything that I can within my reach and my power and my ability to make sure your experience is as favorable and as satisfactory as possible. And that doesn't mean we live in a homogenous business. That doesn't mean that everybody's the same. Diversity is a beautiful thing. Diversity helps organizations flourish, but it's a diversity of ideas within the boundaries of your vision, your mission, and your values. Because if everyone isn't going the same direction, you're going to have problems within your organization, right? If everyone does not share in the future state that you want to create, they need to be on a different ship. That's just the way business works. That's the way leadership works. That's the way organizations work. And so what happens if you have individuals who are, I don't want to say necessarily toxic, because they're not always toxic, but who are against the direction of your organization and you're leading the organization, then you're going to have internal strife that sometimes can't be mitigated and sometimes will cause cancers in your organization. Now, there's nothing wrong with individuals who will challenge decisions in a healthy way because they want what's best for the organization. And there's ways to do that. I always invite and give permission to my people to challenge me when they believe that something I've committed to as far as organizationally or something that I've done that's not in line with the vision, the mission, and the values is happening. And that happens from time to time. And I'm thankful for it because I can then respond to it. I either respond of a rationale why that might be a little bit different than what they understood, or I respond saying, you're absolutely right. Thank you. Thank you for calling me out. Thank you for challenging me. In fact, I just had an employee. This is another aspect of servant leadership that's so important, giving people permission to challenge me as a leader within the organization when my work could be even better, right? So I encourage one of my people to challenge anyone who keeps you from doing your best possible work, including myself. And so I was recording a podcast episode and I did the intro, and my producer, who I challenged to challenge me, said, my philosophy was, this is your baby. You produce it. You produce excellence. If any piece is not excellent, go back and find out where it wasn't excellent and make the correction. So I got a text message that said, hey, your intro on this episode was a little flat and I need you to do better. I know you can. You're a great speaker. And would you do that for me? And then, sorry. My response was, love this. Absolutely. And don't ever apologize for doing your best possible work. And so that invitation warranted a response in the positive. Now, you might say, well, my boss would never do that. My leader would never do that. Well, that's a conversation that, unfortunately, some companies have to have. And you've got to decide, are you on the right ship long term, right? Maybe it's temporary. Maybe it's for a season. But getting involved with an organization or being a change agent within an organization that can lead to a serving mindset is not only fruitful, but sustaining. And it's not just Southwest Airlines or Chick-fil-A. Disney Company also employs a servant leader mindset. The Starbucks company as well. And many, many others who are dominating organizations because it works. It works to serve. So if you can remember one thing about this conversation, it's this. Instead of leading from the top down, lead from the bottom up. If you're a leader and you want to create an organization that's so healthy and vibrant, start focusing on how can I create leadership within my organization through serving others that will continue to perpetuate and feed nourishing fruit to all stakeholders in this company. Well, my friend, we did it again. I'm so glad you joined me on this episode of A Call to Leadership. If you've been with me on the show, listening in, you'll know this. But if you're new, you may not know that I created a free course for you that you don't need to provide an email address. You don't need to go anywhere, but to stay right here in the podcast. I created the very first 6 episodes of the podcast because I wanted you to have the kind of value that you need to take advantage of to thrive as a leader. If you haven't done that yet, listen to episodes 1-6, and I'll see you on the next episode. I'm Dr. Nate Sala, and this is A Call to Leadership.